Hey, everybody, it's Robert. We're sitting here at Mitchell's Military at Pearl and Pine Brewery, and I'm joined with
Kyle. Man, I'm pumped to have Q here, man. He's got a lot of stuff to talk about.
So, without further ado, then, this is Q.
There he is. Now, just real, I haven't really told Robert this, but I've been kind of like creeping your Instagram a little bit. And, dude, you were like so motivated. You were, it's honestly seems like kind of a breath of fresh air a little bit. Like,
I appreciate it, Kyle. I honestly try to be that way. Like, authentically, that's really who my personality is and what I really want people to really see from what I'm trying to portray and put out there.
Yeah.
Outside of what other special ops guys are really, you know, I don't want to be this, okay, I'm some hard stoic person. I want to really show that I can be relatable to people. And, you know, we're all in the same circle.
That's awesome.
Well, it's so true. And I got to tell you, we haven't had a seal on the show in quite some time. So it's refreshing anyway for that.
Glad to be back. I mean, the first one. Wow. There you go.
Let's do it. And a lot of it ends up being the guest of this show end up being more because of the network that we have. So it's, hey, you know, you need to talk to Kyle. Hey, you need to talk to Q or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a while we've been in that space. We've been primarily within, like, the soft space around, you know, Rangers and, you know, or conventional Army and even some of the Marine Corps guys that we knew and everything. You know, so it's good, anyway, to have yourself on the show. And thanks so much for coming all this way. And nobody knows this story, but I'm going to go ahead and share it. This is the second time Q's been here, only because the first time I screwed up, and I said next Friday, and I never sat down and said the date, and when you said, hey, I'm here, I looked at my wife, and I go, oh, my God, what the hell happened? And I looked at my phone, and I went back and looked at our messages, and I said next Friday, and she goes, but you didn't put the date? And I go, no, I didn't put the date. So, I appreciate you coming all this way again.
Yes. All good.
Thank you so much, man.
I like, you know, doing things like that because it allows me to get the story out so people can understand where I'm from, you know, where I'm going, everything I've been through and lessons learned throughout my life. Yeah. So, I really take the point to make the point to get these things out here. So, coming out here, man, I enjoy it. I don't really know nothing about Georgia, Atlanta, but this is cool little trip.
Yeah, well, this south side here, there's so much history here. Like we were talking about, this is where they filmed The Walking Dead and this community space. And I'm actually Fried Green Tomatoes. I'm trying to think of some of the other movies. It's all been...
If you walk down the sidewalks here, you'll see little movie symbols where they've kind of picked this town to...
I'm doing that.
There you go.
Not far from here, probably about 30 minutes from here is where they film all the Marvel as well.
Yeah, what? Avengers, all that. Yeah.
So I'm trying to get into that.
Really?
I honestly am. I have not talked to anyone associated with it, but I'm telling you, my goal is to get into that.
Well, the studios are literally 30 minutes up the road here from where we're sitting right now.
I might
now.
Drive up there and just knock on the door.
There you go.
Well, they're going to be watching the show anyway. Now that you mentioned that, they'll be contacting you.
That's right.
So, this area has got all kinds of cool little things and such here. But where is home originally, though?
My original home is Washington, D.C. I was born in D.C. 1980. So everybody now knows how old I am. I was raised by my grandparents, honestly. The story goes, you guys know this too, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, drugs was a huge thing in America at the time. And a lot of families were having what we call crack babies back then. I was considered that through my mom. Right. Because she was a drug addict, heavily drug addict during that time. So when I was born, some things went on with my grandparents and all that and my mom, and they kind of took me from her because she was in and out of prison. Didn't know who my dad was. No one knew who that person was. So it was one of those things where I kind of grew up in that cycle of where you think most people I say statistically, most people stay into that cycle and they don't really get out of it. But I had something in me that always wanted to be better than the circumstance, right? My mom was just terrible, you know, and she still is today. She still is on drugs right now, actually. She's in North Carolina currently. So that's kind of where that started from. But that's originally where I'm from.
Yeah, so your grandparents were able to kind of maybe also instill some of the good qualities and traits, or at least teased it out of there. It must have been, there had to have been some string there to pull. You said you had something in you, so they must have saw that in you as well.
You know, in the house that I was living in, it was my grandmother, my grandfather, a family friend, my uncle in the basement, me, an aunt, and then my mom in and out. She was in prison. So being the only kid in there was a lot of, you know, violence. I saw all of that stuff, you know, domestic violence, drug and alcohol. Alcohol was heavily used in the house as well, you know. My grandparents did the best they could, and I love them. I have a tattoo of my grandmother right now because she passed away when I was in the Navy. when I was going through the training to be a SEAL. But the things I witnessed growing up from the domestic violence, I mean, I remember seeing my mom being drugged out of the house by police officers while I'm staying at my neighbor. My neighbor's, my best friend, his mom would come and get me and just have me sit on the porch or bring me in the house, and we would just sit there and look out the window and watch these cops taking her away. So I had to witness and go through all of that. And what my grandparents had to do, because they was working all the time, was try to give me something more and try to give me something better and try to, like, teach me, right? But, you know, you still kind of have, you still have that environment around you that wants to pull on you, right? You know, and my school was right up the street. Everyone on the block knew who my family was because it was pretty heavily in that time. And drugs and alcohol in D.C. in the 90s was definitely pretty strong. Late 80s, early 90s was pretty.
So what was that window for you to see out?
Oh, that was a good question on that one, right? Because I was still struggling a little bit. So my grandparents moved me down to North Carolina. So I went from the city to the country. And that was not something I was used to, you know. The school I went to in D.C. was primarily all black at the time, right? And then I go to North Carolina, and it was a flip-flop, primarily white. And I don't know anyone there. And I'm poor at the same time, right? So my grandparents moved me down to North Carolina. I'm in a country where every house is on an acre of land, and the next house another acre, then the next house another acre. And I had to take the bus to school and all these things. And I'm poor. I'm living in the same clothes. I'm stinky. I don't, my hygiene is bad. I'm getting teased in class. I didn't really make friends well, you know, growing up in that time. And then my mom back and forth in jail, right? And then she tracked us down. So it took some time really for me to get out of that. And then learn that I had talents that I just didn't know I had, which was got me into sports.
Okay. So, so those that, sports is the window. Sports is That's the window. Awesome. That's on what sports specifically, or all of them?
I tried all of them when I got to North Carolina. I didn't, wasn't able to play when I was in D.C., but when I got to North Carolina, I tried them all. So football, track, baseball. Football, track, basketball. Yeah, indoor track and all that stuff. So I found that I was good at it. I was really fast, right? And then I started creating friends. And because my grandparents were very sick, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, all those different things, it was... I didn't have family to come and support me at my games and stuff like that. No one really came to watch me play. So my coaches, they were really there as like that stake for me, like the dad that I didn't have, you know. My friends that I started to create when I was there, their mom and dad started to really hone in on me and be like, man, Javon is what they call me, man. They love me. They saw something different. They saw that I didn't have the typical mom and dad watching me and cheering me on. So that really kind of really helped me out. And they would come and get me as well on the weekends. So it was a different thing. You know, everything was different from when I left the city to the country. Things really
so
changed.
So it literally took a village, you believe?
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. I mean, even the coaches that I grew up with in high school, they still keep in contact with me today.
That's fantastic. You know, you hear so often about coaches say that they're not just teaching the X's and O's. It's really about teaching boys how to be men. You're a living example of that, of sharing that type of story that I don't think sometimes people are aware of what coaches do, or family members and that connection, how important sports are and playing a pivotal role for some people.
Oh, man. My ex-coach, my track coach, because I was living in San Diego and Las Vegas, they visited me out there. You know, they came out there to come and see me. You know, when I came here to North Carolina to visit family, the reporter, his name is Mike London, who used to always report on me in sports, he's always trying to talk to me. You know, he wants to see me again. He wants to show where, because he knows my background as well, where I came from, the unstable nature of my home, to how I became where I am in the SEAL teams and all these different things that I'm involved in as well. So, like you say, the village, it really was a village.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm telling you, everybody had to have a place in me to really, to pull my power out of me. You know, I saw it, even though the area of D.C. was still pulling on me in certain things, because I still had my issues in high school. I was still like a little hothead dummy, you know, getting attitudes, still getting a little fights and just being stupid, still almost trying to pull me back into that cycle of that environment of ghetto. Let's just be what it is. Ghetto, you know, hood, stupid, drugs, alcohol. My mom, again, my friends in the school knew who my mom was. And that was another bad thing that I just couldn't understand. I hated that part, right? People knew what my mom was involved in. And then my brothers and all that stuff started to come along while I was in North Carolina. So it was just some crazy stuff.
So through all of that, did you, you were talking about that you may not have been totally paying attention, but did you recognize all that was going on around you and how many people were really engaging and wanting to see you grow and prosper? Was it hitting you, in other words, at that time frame?
It did. It did. You know, I felt I owed them, the people who were really supporting me, proof that I can do it. Right. I really did. I really own the fact that I can see these people taking ownership mm-hmm. of who I am and where I'm coming from, that they really wanted to see me. So I didn't want to let them down. I was kind of inspired by my grandparents. Number one, those are the ones who really inspired me, which I believe, truly believe, that you have to be inspired to be great, or at least to shoot for it, mm-hmm. to strive for it, in my personality about it. So my personal definition of it. And, you know, we all get motivated at times to do this and that and the other. But as soon as you kind of fall out of that motivation because whether it's cold outside, oh, I don't want to mm-hmm. go to the gym because it's raining or whatever, right? You ain't motivated. You know, you lost the motivation when you're really inspired by it. You just run out there no matter what. You're running in the rain. You don't care. But I was really inspired by them and the coaches and my principal. And, you know, even when I was in detention, the teacher that was there running over me in detention, I was still inspired in them because they looked at me as they saw something different. You know, they're like, man, they see so much potential in you. They saw potential in me. And so I wanted to impress them, even though I was still doing dumb stuff. Yeah. And when I got caught, I really felt bad about it because I had kids in high school.
Yeah.
Yep. I was a teenage dad as well. And you know that didn't go well.
I've seen that on your social media.
How old were you when you had your first child?
Like 17, 16?
17, yeah. Maybe 16, because it was junior year going to my senior year, I believe. Yeah. Yep. So, again, another letdown. Here I am being stupid out in the street, doing stuff I shouldn't have done. So I don't recommend doing that. And my grades wasn't good. You know, I didn't really have another place to really go, really. So that's where I think my grandmother was really pushing the military, because I never did ROTC and all those things. She was just more so just like, we got to figure out something for you. Now you got a kid. You got to take care of this kid. How are you going to do that? Mm-hmm. And the area we was living at, the job market wasn't that great. So we going to struggle, or am I going to join the military and really use that avenue to be able to, you know, financially benefit my son? So that was the nature of the beast of me pushing me into the military.
Ah, so that's what I was going to wonder about that. So did they talk to you about which branch, or how did you decide on the branch? How did that end up?
My grandmother picked that one.
Ah, okay.
Now,
okay.
She chose that idea. And she had this recruiter coming to the house trying to get me. You know, I'm a football star. I'm always mm-hmm. in the newspaper, right? I'm bringing in clippings home to show my grandmother, you know, track also. I'm a state champion in the hurdles, 110 hurdles. I'm running fast. I'm doing all these different things. So I'm showing her all this stuff. And he keeps trying to get me in the military. I'm like, nah, I ain't doing it. So eventually she told him that I'm really good in football. Can he play football for the Navy? And he said, yeah. And then he used that to get me in. But he lied to me.
That he did.
You got to get recruited by, you know, the academy to do that. So he lied to me on that. That's how he got me, man. And trust me, my whole family did not like it. Not the fact that he lied, but the fact that my grandmother was pushing me into the military.
Yeah.
Everyone hated it. You guys know back in the 90s, America, racism, all that stuff was still pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So my family looked at it as, you're not going into the white man's war. That was the phrase. You're not going into the white man's military. So they looked at it as a negative light. So I was almost there with them. But grandma had the answer. She was still right, no matter what. And that curved the nature of the beast for me to understand, really, it's not the white man's war. This is, all of America. But the environment, the culture of America at that time had that going on in the 90s. So I broke through it. And I joined. And as soon as I graduated, I was off just 2 weeks later. I didn't hang out for a week or nothing like that. I was just gone.
So you ended up going in delayed entry program then while you were still in high school waiting mm-hmm. for your date.
Yep.
So when you left and everything, it was me. I left right after high school. I think it was like a week later or so.
Yeah.
When you ended up going, what was your MOS that you were going into? What did you select?
Well, so before I graduated, though, this is the time when because my mom had my brother and my sister. So when my mom had my brother, the dad got custody of him and took him away real quickly. And then like a year or two later, she had my sister. And that's when we really were starting to have issues, because my grandmother tried to push me to live with my mom. She bought her a trailer and all that stuff. So she tried to make that relationship start to fester. And I wasn't feeling it. So I did it anyway, because but I wasn't feeling it. And then she would leave me with my sister. And now I'm in high school still trying to take care of this young baby while she's going out to do what she needs to do to get her high or whatever, her kick. And I'm finding everything. I was a curious teenager. So I'm looking in her dresser drawers. I'm looking in the pillowcases. I'm finding the empty cigarette cartons that had the crack in there. I am more exposed to things than ever, you know, at this time. And then I try to stand up to her and tell her, I'm not doing it. You're taking, Siobhan was her, my sister's name. You're taking her with you, thinking that will make her stay home. She will actually take her with her.
Mm.
And then now I'm sitting there at the house by myself like, damn, that didn't work. So eventually social services got involved, and then they came and took my sister and took her to foster care.
Oh, no.
Right. And I was at the house when they came and got her.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So that was a big, strong push, as well as trying to figure out what we're going to do, because now how are we going to deal with this? I want to help get my sister out of here. I'm a teenager, but I just had a kid at the same time. So I got all these things. My brother, he's staying with his dad. I'm figuring out what can I do to make this situation better, because I want to be that catalyst, right? I want to be that one. I want to be the first one to do something different like that and try to be a rescuer at the same time. So when I finally agreed to go into the military, they gave me the MOS as a aircrew SAR swimmer initially. And the goal was, once I got done with that school, even though I got kicked out of that, was to go and get my sister out of foster home through the system. Yeah. When I turned 21.
And you were going to try to take her and make her a military dependent, and she was going to live with you?
That was the goal.
That was the goal.
That was the goal. But in that system, some things happened. So she had to have counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got her out, she was around 7-ish or whatever by this time. I kept her in counseling, but she still had some battles that she had to deal with that she was going through from what she witnessed or what happened to her while she was in the system during that time. So things changed, you know. And then I had to release her from my home at a time. I had to, because it was really bad for her. I had police at my house. I had social services back at my house again. Now I'm in San Diego at this time. So she was really battling some things, and we had to make a change.
Man, that is a lot of stuff that you're going through.
You're what, 22 at this time? 21?
Yeah. 21. 21, 22. Yeah.
How did the command feel about all of this? I mean, you're having to deal with a lot of emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was back then. I can say I'll give the military. I got to give the military grace, you know, because they really could have put me through the wall with some of these things, you know, kicked me out because I was just so much of a hassle. Right. And so I give them grace for giving me the amplitude or the freedom to kind of take care of some of the situations that I was dealing with. And especially when it came to my sister and all that stuff. I mean, because I was still dealing with my own demons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I first came in as an aircrew SAR swimmer, I got kicked out of that program because I just wasn't showing up on time. I was late. I still had those demons bothering me at that same time. And it really just, it had to be a teaching piece. It humbled me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it taught me some things that I need to get out of my own way.
Yeah.
Let that ghetto lifestyle disappear.
Star athlete, you know, everybody knew you and everything, but yet dealing with the struggles back behind you.
Yep.
But then, this is heavy.
Well, then there's probably some resentment too of the adults in your life saying, you know, I was this good of an athlete with these circumstances. Uh-huh. I can only imagine some of the things you thought of what could have happened if I wasn't dealing with these circumstances and was given the freedom to just be an athlete instead of being a dad to your little sister and to your own son at a very young age.
Yeah.
So it's honestly amazing that you're sitting here in front of us today, honestly, to be completely, because you were right when you first came in and said that at the time, you know, people that had similar situations as you weren't doing that. They were staying in the cycle.
Uh-huh.
And for you to have the wherewithal to still break out of that cycle, I think it's amazing in and of itself. That's fantastic, man.
Appreciate that. Appreciate it, honestly.
All right. So you're 22, 23. We're in San Diego. So how'd you get into Buds? Like,
what did you, when you got kicked out, where did they put you in?
Yeah.
Before Buds.
Oh, yeah. When they kicked me out. I mean, so that It was in Pensacola too.
Was it?
Right down the street. I just forgot about that. So that's why I was telling you I was down there before, because Air Crew SAR School was in Pensacola, Florida. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got kicked out of that whole program. And then I thought I was good too. I mean, I was doing good at the time, and then, you know, things started happening. So they sent me to the CBs in the Navy, mm-hmm. which is the engineering course. Yeah. You guys know about all that right there, which was, that was the need of the Navy at that time now. Mm. So that's what they needed. It's not what I wanted, but I lost those opportunities because I was being a dumbass. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? And that's why I think people don't realize you can lose opportunities that's right there in front of you. I was happy with being an air crew rescue swimmer, and I lost that opportunity. But yes, hindsight, I became a SEAL, but that doesn't always happen to people. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you got an opportunity, you got to take advantage of it. You can't just be, you know, just blowing it off and be treating it casual. You got something in front of you that I should have, you know, gave it more value than I did at the time. So I went to Texas to go to plumbing school. So I became a plumber.
Is that right?
Nice. Yeah, I know, right? I went from all this to now I'm a plumber in the Navy.
It's a story, and that's what's cool about it. How long were you the plumber before you go, okay, I need to get out of here, man, and then drop papers?
Oh, right away.
Really?
As soon as I got to the school,
yeah,
I learned the CBs had different rates. They didn't tell me that in Pensacola. They just say you're going to be a UT in the CBs. I was like, okay, I don't know what this is, but okay, cool. Get to wear camouflage. All right. So when I get there, I found out they got electricians. I found out they got steel workers. They got builders. They got EAs. I'm like, all these different things that I wish I would have known. I would have like tried out for electrician or a steel worker. I would have asked for those instead, but I got plumber. And that was something.
So, when they looked at all of your paperwork and saw that you got kicked out and all that, did you have it in your mind that you're still going to make it no matter what, and you're going to get into this program? Or is it, how difficult was it, in other words, for you to get selected into going into uh-huh. the program?
Well, you know,
your command had to believe in you, in other words.
They did. Mm-hmm. I took it upon myself as a reality check, got humbled, mm-hmm. right, to be a better sailor at this time now. Okay, let me do this. It's a career thing I could do. I could take that out if I get out the military. It didn't dawn on me at all that I can go be a Navy SEAL. The only Navy SEAL movie I ever saw was a Charlie Sheen jumping off the bridge, you know, in the 90s. So that was my equivalent of the SEAL teams. But when I was in the Navy, it just never dawned on me still. So yeah. I'm going to be a CB. I'm going to finally do this, right? And I built up a rapport of a outstanding sailor where people really looked up to me, and they trusted me that I can do a job independently by myself and didn't need people to like show me how to do this. Mm-hmm. I can do plumb up a whole bathroom on the golf course or whatever. And then one day, well, how did it happen? Oh yeah. One day, I got stationed in San Diego as a CB, and I got the chance to work with some SEALs. Didn't know it was going to happen. And I got to work with some SEALs. I was like, oh, that's what I want right there. That's what I want to do. Because it gave me an idea that now I have a way that I can really affect what was going on in the world after 9/11, all that stuff. I really wanted to have a direct effect. And again, it brought me back to my inspiration of impressing my grandmother, letting mm-hmm. my grandmother know that I can be more, letting my coaches, all my friends' parents who were still following me and reaching out to me, even though we didn't have social media like that back then, but we had MySpace and all this other stuff. People don't know about all that right now. People watching them are like, what's MySpace and all this? But I'm telling you, it was a thing. And it gave me an opportunity now to really show out and stand out again. And I really wanted to try to knock this out. But there's a story upon that as well. I'll tell you about that. The first time I got approved to go into Buzz to be the SEAL, my class was like 280 guys, like almost 300 of us. And I was doing pretty good, right? Doing pretty good. Got to Hell Week. And for those who don't know what Hell Week is, just for the audience, that's 5 days straight. You guys already know. 5 days straight. Start Sunday night, and we go to a Friday morning. And you basically get 3, maybe 6 hours of sleep, and that starts on Tuesday afternoon, evening, or Wednesday morning, something like that, and that's it. So by Tuesday around 3 a.m., I got to a point mentally where I didn't believe in myself anymore. That self-doubt came in. It crept in. I felt like I was letting my boat team down. And everything about when you quit Buzz is you got to go ring that bell. And the first time I went through the program, I quit. I actually quit.
Wow.
I gave it up. I let the dream go.
You sitting here today, I never would have guessed you'd have said that story.
No. Most people don't know. Most people don't know.
Wow, that had to be at that time frame with everything that you're trying to prove and, you know, getting yourself back together, leaving and having to do that. That must have been pretty impactful. I mean,
it stopped me in my tracks.
Well, that's the first thing I thought of was your momentum. Your momentum had to have.
Oh, yeah.
Like your mental momentum at that point had to have been a brick wall.
I knew I was wrong. And I knew it was a mental breakdown, mental failure the instant I did it. As soon as I did it, everything about quitting, it let me see that I could have pushed myself further. Because as soon as I was done running the bell, I mean, my body was fine.
Mm.
There was nothing wrong.
Mm.
You know, there was no more pain. All this and just, you know, 30 seconds away from it, there's no pain. But it's like, wow, I could have kept pushing forward. Because all I did now was just put the boats on their head and start walking off the rest of my class. And I could have stayed for that. And I could have pushed through. But I had that moment of weakness, that mental moment of weakness, that mental breakdown that so many people like us do, that I started to doubt and I started to think and justify these excuses in myself. So this is what came up. It was I was telling myself that maybe I'm not good enough, that maybe God wants something else for me to do. I can say I tried out to be a SEAL. How many people I know can say they tried out? I can go still and serve my country, right? There's nothing wrong with me serving my country, not a SEAL. I allowed that excuse and I justified that excuse to quit and go off and do something else and think it was ghost. But the moment I quit, it was like, no, you were stupid. That was wrong.
Mm.
It wasn't God telling you that, you know, this ain't for you. That was me. That was it. Just me being a wimp. Me quitting something that was hard, that was challenging for me. When all I needed to understand that anything that's worth doing in this life, you just got to go through the process. It's meant to be hard, right? God doesn't put it in front of you because it's hard for you and you can't do it. You just got to be harder and go for it, right? And go through the process and just be willing to accept you're going to struggle because we all don't win all the time. And that happened to me. And I allowed that. I justified those excuses and I just said, I let it go. And the moment I did, to answer your question, the moment I did, I'm telling you, I was hurt, mentally hurt. Like, but it lit another fire in me though. Again, like, I was so pissed off at myself. I was determined to get back as soon as possible. But I had to go through the shame now going back to my command and go through all of that. So I had to get humbled again, right? And then I went through all that stuff before I was able to go back.
But, you know, that's the reason why they call it a selection and they call it Hell Week, quite honestly, is because of what you just described. Well, at the same time frame, we have people like a guest that we just had earlier that talks about never quit. And it's that if you understand that going in, like if you're listening to this or watching this and you're going, yeah, that's I've always wanted to go to SEAL. And, you know, he's going to tell about Hell. He's going to Hell Week. He's going to talk about Buds. And then you talk about you rang the bell.
Yeah.
And then follow that back up with, you know, at that moment, you realize because you rang the bell, all the things that you were self-doubting yourself about, all that pain, all that tired, everything went away because at that moment, those weren't the things you were focused on as much anymore. Now all of a sudden you feel good. I'm okay. Maybe I, you know, it's too late at that point. You know, it's one of those things that you got to go back and have a little humility. Well, but it sounds like you did. I mean, you're sitting here today. We know the rest of the story. Yeah. So obviously there was something else there when you went back to the Seabees.
Man, it was, you know, seeing everybody that I let down, right? Because I'm still inspired about everything else that I went through with my grandparents, seeing them. I wanted them to know that I can do this, right? From where I come from, I'm the only Navy SEAL from where I come from. And I wanted to be that one. I wanted to take that ownership and be that one, right? And when I had to go back to my CB command and see everybody too, the people who signed me off, because they sign you off and then they lose a body.
Mm-hmm.
And they assume that, you know, Javon is good. Javon Qualls is good. We trust he's going to make it. He's going to be over there. He's going to represent us well. And now I got to come back to them and say, I failed. I quit. Not just failed. I actually rang out. So seeing their faces as well, that was a gut check because they all anticipated I was going to make it. they looked at me like that. They just knew I was going to make it. And then I made some friends in the SEAL teams. They knew I had it in me to make it through this program. So I had to regroup and, you know, I had to do another deployment. And while I was on that deployment, though, because normally when you leave, then you get one shot most of the time. Well, not most of the time. Sometimes you get a chance to come back. So I reapplied, but normally you got to wait 2 years if they approve you. So I'm like a year out. I'm still like a year out, but I'm applying. I'm like, no, I got to get back in. Let me get back in. Let me get mm-hmm. back in. Initially, they denied me. And I went to a Navy SEAL Master Chief. That's an E9. And I told him that they denied me. And he knew me well. And he's also one of those people who was like, I want this guy in the SEAL teams in my community. So he made a call and he got me orders. And again, now I got people, you know, opening doors up for me. They give me that, you know, that kudo to me, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, I got to make this happen. This is it. Right. So now I get to this point where now I understand more about the mindset, because now this thing is more not about me anymore. It's about them. And I think everyone, we all talk about the why, right? The big why you do a thing and the why should make you cry or whatever. I've heard that. But people don't realize it's such a real thing. It's a true, powerful thing that I didn't believe initially, but it's real. I didn't cry out my why, but my why was huge. My why was because of my grandparents. My why to show people that come from where I come from in any kind of negative lifespan from where they come from, that you can do it still. So my why was bigger than just me now, right? I got all these people looking at me. I got my command who signed me off. And they're like, look, this is it. This is it. We're signing you off. We're trusting you to do this. My grandparents, my grandmother, now this time, she's like, don't do it. Because she's like, this is hard. And she understands now that the SEAL teams is geared to make you an offensive unit. And you could die when you get out there into this war zone. So now she doesn't even want me to go back at this time. So I got all this stuff going. But I'm like, I got to do this. I got to do this for my kids. I got to do this for my grandparents. I got to do this for everybody that supported me when I was coming up in the grind. And then the Navy command who was pushing me. So I got an approval. Finally went right back as soon as I came back from deployment. Right back. And I got a winter class this time. San Diego. Now, people think in San Diego that the weather is always nice. The weather is tricky.
Water is cold.
Oh, that water's freezing.
I've been to San Diego in July and the water's still cold.
Yeah.
Like it's.
Oh, I'm telling you. It may only go up 5 degrees. That's mm-hmm. it. So it's always like 50 something. Yeah. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
And now I'm going through in the wintertime. The first time was in the summer. The second time, it had to be the worst. So same thing again. Now I got like 200 guys in the class now. And as we get closer to Hell Week, other leadership in my class, like everyone has a class leader, right? Like think if you're in college, you got a team leader or whatever mm-hmm. on sports and stuff like that for all the listeners. So I become the class leader. Oh my God. Now everything that goes on with me when it comes to dealing with the instructor staff.
Now you can't quit.
You yeah. can't quit now. You know, they're beating me even more.
They knew that though.
Oh my God.
They knew that.
I'm like, we started with like 200 and something. And then we get to right before Hell Week. Cause Hell Week, people don't realize this, is the fourth week of training. They started pretty early. And remember, to be a SEAL is a year long training, long pipeline. So the selection program, you start Hell Week the fourth week. By the time we got to the fourth week, we was down about 120 people. So now we lost a lot of people now. And now at that point, I'm in charge of my class. So I don't want it, but I got to. I'm the next lead guy in charge. And we go into Hell Week again and we get to the same position where I quit and rang the bell the same time, the first time. And, I thought about it. It hit me again. The mental thing mm-hmm. hit me. I looked across the bay because you're on Coronado and you can see all the stuff in regular San Diego downtown. Yeah. You can see all the lights at nighttime, like 2 a.m. again. Mm-hmm. You can see the lights of the ships. You see everything again. You can see it all like, man, I can go right back to the Navy again. But then I started to think outside of me, right? This is not no longer about me. And that is not a cliche, you know, saying. This really was not about me anymore at that point. And it was like, I got to keep pushing this through. I can't stop this time. I remember we took off. I'm still under the boat and I fell from under the boat. And the Master Chief of Buzz at that time, he looked at me. He said, this is it for you. You better show up or go home. So I got up and that was that moment, that real like moment where it was hitting me. Am I going to stay or am I going to go? I got up and I sprinted back to my boat, took charge of my boat and took off with them from that point on. And crushed it, got pulled out on Thursday by the doctors because my kidney started to shut down. So they said I was dying. They said because of all the stuff, the strain you're going through, you're barely eating, you're barely getting any water, hydrating or whatever, and all that strain on your body, my muscles were breaking down internally, and it was poisoning me. And so I didn't know that was a thing. And they said my kidneys were shutting down because I was having abdominal pain. So on Thursday, you do med checks, and the doctor's like asking questions. Anybody having any pains, this, that, and the other? You know, you strip down in your underwear, and I'm like, my stomach is hurting. And he's like, lay down. I lay down. He pressed on my stomach, and it was just crazy pain. And they was like, you got to go to the hospital. So they took me out, and I'm like yelling, though. I'm not trying to leave because I already know. We only got a few more hours in Friday morning here, and I graduate. So I'm fighting this doc. I'm starting to cry because I'm like, this is it now. I am not giving up this time. This is my chance. This is my moment. I'm not doing this again. This is it. So they finally got me in the hospital. Ambulance got me in the hospital, and I'm calling back. I'm like stitched up. They got all kind of stuff in me now, needles in me. And I'm like calling back like, hey, I was trying to get the instructor. It took me like 3 different times to get an instructor on the call. And he's like, is this Quarles? He's like, yes. I'm like, yes, sir. I did not quit. The doctors pulled me out doing med checks. They put me in the ambulance, and they sent me here. I did not quit. He's like, don't worry about it. Go ahead and heal up, and we'll see you tomorrow. Man, a weight was lifted off me. I hung up the phone, and I was out. Mm. And I wake up the next day. I just couldn't move everything. Because when you stop something like that, when you stop moving, your body now wants to try to heal itself, and you can't move. Nothing works. So I was in all kind of pain. I came back in a wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
Graduate.
Oh, yeah. Well, I finished Hell Week. I came back on Friday afternoon. Everybody in the class was like laying on the floor because they take all your mattresses off the bunk bed and they put them on the floor because they don't want people to fall. And you stay there, right? And they got doing med checks all night long. So I was rolling through the barracks in a wheelchair. Somebody pushed me. I forgot who it was. I think it was a duty person in uniform. And I'm just seeing guys laying down and just shivering, just shaking. They're trying to heal too. Their body's now trying to start and nobody's moving. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And I hated that I missed that last few hours with them, but my body was shutting down just in a different way. And the next week, we went through the next process, and then 6 months later, graduated. And the main thing about me graduating, I graduated top of my class.
I was going to say, there's more to this story. You just didn't graduate. You took top.
Yep. I graduated top of the class, and I had to give a speech. But during that time, I almost forgot. I'm sorry. During that time, my grandmother passes away. So now the inspiration piece of why I really was trying to like be brave and be different and be something outside of the cycle, that hamster wheel of what people like me grow up into, turn out to be, had left. And we'll get the call. They do the Red Cross thing and they're trying to tell me I need to go home. But I'm like, no, I don't want to go home. That's the initial thing. Because I know my grandmother would have not wanted me to leave and have to do this all over again or wait or get pushed back or anything. So I was like, nah, I'm going to just finish it out. I'm going to just gut it out. Then we got another call saying, I have to leave now because little did I know either all the 9 kids she had, she made me her, I had to sign.
Executor.
Executor thing. Yeah, I had to do that. So that was huge. You know, that was another touching moment, you know. My aunts and uncles, they supported it and everything. They loved me because they also tried to be that mom and dad for me, all my aunts and uncles. So they called me and said, I have to come home now to do everything so we can bury her. And the next thing about this was, it was right around my birthday.
Wow. Heavy, heavy, heavy.
It was crazy. It was crazy. So I'll go home first to see the body and sign off all these things with the funeral and all that stuff. And I knocked this out. And then we had a celebration. You know, for my birthday party, it was a beautiful, you know, beautiful hardship at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And we went through it and, you know, the family was there to support me. They were happy. You know, it went from, remember I told you when, you know, my grandmother talked me to first come in, everybody else was against that, you know, because of the military, what the life was in that time. But at this point now, they are so happy and proud that she put me in that position and that I'm taking advantage of it and I'm growing. I'm becoming more. I'm getting better. So they're opening up. They're really on that whole level like, great job. We love you. Go back out there and you crush it and you do what you got to do. So that helped as well. So I kept that inspiration. Then I got her tattooed on my arm and all that stuff. So got back in the training and the night before graduation, I got a call from the instructor staff and it was like, hey, we need you to make a statement. I was like, statement. He's like, yeah. I was like, why? He was like, cause you're the Iron Man. That's how blatant as it was. That's exactly how it was. They didn't like make it cool. They were like, cause you're the Iron Man. I was like, oh, so I got to speak. So I got to speak in front of these people. They had all these people out there. Well, actually, no, Buzz, I'm sorry. Buzz had a small indoors personal clothes graduation piece. And then you do the next 6 months of SQT and you graduate with it. Now you're in the uniform. You get your pin. Mm-hmm. And you got admirals and all these big wigs coming out there. So I graduated that in closed doors, but I got the honor man for that. And that was huge for me. You know,
yeah.
That was the beginning. That was now like I'm coming to where I need to be. I'm starting to grow. I'm starting to be there. I'm starting to be something that I've been telling people that I can be or telling myself that I can be. Cause it starts there. You got to tell yourself you can do it, right? That self-talk. And that's really where I was really trying to become because I knew I can do it. And I took off with that. And then we go on SQT. SQT for the viewers is SEAL qualification training. That's where you actually learn the job. You learn how to be a SEAL. You know, you get the gun. Now you're out there doing tactics. You're out there in the California desert. You're out there in the bay. You're doing dive mission profiles. You're creating demolition. I wanted to be a breacher. So when it comes to blowing shit up, I was all about that. So I was learning about all this stuff, explosives. And, I get fired, right? I'm still a class leader, but I get fired. But it was only because I thought it was something I did wrong. Right. I get fired because I'm not the most senior guy in my class now because we still had to take a test for rank. Mm-hmm. I think you have to take a test.
Do
you
no,
take
we resume? Don't have to do a test. You guys do.
Yeah.
We do based on do record boards. And boards. Yeah. Yeah.
Enlisted record brief yeah. And the boards.
You have to do a board and you test, right?
For E7.
E7. OK, I knew there was a point. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, shoot. Well, yeah, that's what they did to me. I said, we took a test and the other dude hit the next rank and I got fired. But I really didn't know initially. I was like, yeah. Man, did I do something wrong? Like, I'm really looking bad. And so we go through all of that. We go through the training and that's another 6 months. And we get to a point right where we're about to graduate again. Oh, we get to jump school. Now, during my training too, we lost a guy during jump training, you know, out in San Diego. We was doing our free fall. Jump. And a guy, one of the guys in class, he just got caught up in the spin. He tried to pull. His chute didn't come up like open because it was such a fast spin. And then he tried to hit his reserve, well, his cutaway first. And the cutaway, he was so tangled up in it, it didn't go nowhere.
Oh, geez.
So he hit his reserve and it just got caught up in his main. So we lost the guy right before he was getting ready to graduate. So that was big news in San Diego at the time. And then towards the end of that, now we're about to really graduate. Then I get another call. And then my instructor is like, hey, Q, why'd you get fired? One of the other instructors. And I'm like, well, I got fired because the other guy, you know, he outranked me in the middle of training or whatever. I was like, is that it? I was like, yeah, I didn't do nothing wrong. That's what the other instructors told me. I was like, is there something wrong? He's like, nah, but I need you to make another speech. I was like, speech for what? Cause you're on a man again. I was like, get out of here. Come on now. So it was a really big thing, you know, mm-hmm. because there's no one in the history that goes through Navy SEAL Buds and also SQT and graduate both as the honor man. So now I did it the first time. I'm the first black guy to do that in Buds. And they put my helmet in the Navy SEAL Museum, Fort Pierce, Florida, which was huge, right? Sent me a picture and everything of that. And then I graduated top of the honor man again in SQT. That's just something that didn't happen. So now my name will forever be on the board of the honor man graduate for both Buzz and SQT.
Wicked, wicked. That's cool. Awesome. The thing is, though, is like, you know, as much as your grandmother didn't want you to go through all of this and everything mm-hmm. there near the end, because I think she just, like you said, feared for your life and feared yeah. for what was happening and everything. She wasn't also there, at least in spirit she was, but mm-hmm. physically you weren't able to like celebrate with her. These accomplishments, huge accomplishments, man.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Huge accomplishments.
Thank you. Thank you.
That story, if we stopped right there, mm-hmm. that story alone would be enough that if you explain that over and over, especially to the kids, honestly, mm-hmm. that are out there who are listening and, you know, at times going through challenging moments and stuff in high school.
Uncontrollable mm-hmm. challenges.
Uncontrollable yeah. things that were not, you didn't volunteer for those situations.
No.
And sure, you placed yourself in some of that, but it was also had to do with your environment. You allowed yourself to get within the environment and get caught up. And then it takes over in the whole bit. But
just to this point of how you overcame.
Yeah.
It's huge, man.
Yeah. Thanks. And that's what I want people to see, you know, especially the youth that we have, because I'm seeing our teenagers, they're coming up in a way and they're just kind of not where we were coming up. You know, we had a desire to be something more.
It's not as, or maybe our upbringing wasn't as intuitive as theirs. There's instructions for everything for them, right?
Well, there's social media influencers. Yes. So they're influencing good or bad.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks they can be some influencer. People are losing a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dream big now.
That's a good point, because actually you're absolutely right. There are a lot of people who don't understand. You got to earn a hard earns. Like for us, we understood, earning your wages or earning your pay meant you had to do something. You know, nowadays they're looking for those opportunities where they don't have to do nearly as much, but still can earn a living. And social media certainly is. I'm not knocking that for those who want to get into that type of experience, but there is something to be said about that whole process. 100%. You went through the process. You failed at the process. You recovered. You went back into it. Mm-hmm. That's where wisdom comes from.
Yes.
Making mistakes.
Yes. 100% where wisdom comes from. Yes. And because of the way we're doing it now, it's just not us, but the way they're doing it now, the way they're being brought up, they're just not seeing that. You have to pay some dues. There's a process you have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a successful life is not just going to fall in your lap by you taking the easy road of just doing this and just, oh, I'm going to just do that or whatever.
Yeah.
You got to really put effort in it, into something. You know, I try to tell people anything that's worth having, you got to go through it, right? It's going to take you a process. Not everybody can be a SEAL.
Yep.
You know, if everybody could, everybody would. Not everybody could be a millionaire. If you could, everybody would, you know, but you have to go through the process of something, and you're going to go through some struggles, and because you don't grow and you don't learn from those mistakes, mm-hmm. and then you don't get wiser by what you go through. So I look at that and I'm writing a book on that kind of topic.
Good.
And it's called Why Not Me?
Oh, excellent. Great title.
Why Not Me?
You know, so many people want to know, like, what am I going to experience in Hell Week? What happens on day two? What happens on day three? What happens in SQT? You know, what are the things that I can do? And I think at least for some of the people that's been on this show, whether they go through any type of selection, there's a reason why it's a selection and it's not heavily known. You need to go through it, and you got to deal with your own demons and go through the challenges yourself. I can share with you what you're going to do every day, but it may not be the same day is what you experience. You're going to have different moments and different weaknesses and different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, for you, you went through all of this process. You knew what you had to experience again. You almost checked out at the same time frame. But yet you overcame, and it's a great success story, Javon. I mean, certainly is. I'll look forward to that book. When's it gonna come out, by the way?
I'm trying to get it out by the end of this year.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Right when we do the next season of the show and all that stuff, but it kind of goes into that all the way up until when I graduate.
Yeah.
You know, that'll be like the first volume of it, the struggle of life, right? And how we persevere, the resilience of individuals, you know, the drive, right? Because winning is a conscious decision, just like quitting is a conscious decision. But you gotta make those conscious decisions of how bad you want something. How hungry are you to go after that thing? And I want people, when they grab that book, when it's done and they first read it and the title is Why Not Me, ask yourself that. Why not you? Why you can't be the SEAL? Why can't you be like the top podcaster? Why you can't be an engineer, a doctor, you know, an author, a CEO, entrepreneur? Why can't you? But there's a process, right? Go through the process. And I'm going to lay that out, the process that I had to go through to learn and teach now and be like a different, you know, guidance for our young men and women.
Just kind of like a success without failure is a myth, right?
Like, oh, it is.
It's an absolute myth. Like, no one succeeds. Because if you get something that's worth having and you didn't do anything for it, then that was a gift. So that's not your success. It's somebody else's success that gave you that. So, like, I love the message. I love the idea of that book and it being volumed. And, like, the first part, it can be pretty grim.
Mm-hmm.
Second part's way better. Oh, and the third part's still getting written, which is awesome.
You know, the first part, I mean, because the second part still has some drama from – because my mom is still here, and she's still creating certain things, you know. And I'll be honest with you right now. And I don't even think I've even told anyone about this really outside of my close friends. Just a few years ago. So this is all recent. Just a few years ago, the house that I was raised in, my childhood home in North Carolina, burned down.
I saw that.
So what happened was, because my mom was staying there, you know, not paying the mortgage, not doing anything that she needed to do, eventually the family had to make a decision. Were we going to keep the mortgage up? Because we wanted to keep the family in the house in the family, excuse me. But because she was there, it was such a battle. Do we want to pay for this? And she's not doing anything to help support this home. So we had to let it go eventually. And when finally the bank wanted to take ownership of it, they sent the sheriff out. The sheriff goes in, kicks her out, boards up the home. Done. The next day, the house is up in flames. So now we have to put two and two together, you know, as to how did this happen? This house was built in the early 1900s. Ain't never go up in flames. Ain't never been burned in any kind of way ever in this history. And now just a few years ago, because someone gets kicked out, because you're pushed out by the sheriff and it's boarded up. And now someone gets selfish because you don't want no one else to own that home. And now you take all those memories and you send it up in flames. And now it's his ashes. All those things that we had in that home, those pictures on the wall, you know, me helping my grandparents when they're sick, having to call the ambulance because they can't get up and go to the restroom. You know, my sister, my kids, you know, have been there and now it's gone. These things are still, you know, the devil is still going to try to get you no matter what. There's many times you want to get past it. I think the goal is to continue moving forward, even though they're going to keep pulling on you. He's going to keep pulling on you, keep pulling on you. Eventually you'll start to get further away from him, that he can't get you all the time, but he's still going to come after you. And he'll pull you with something. He'll try to get you. And he tried to get me with that. So when I recently just went home, I just came out here and I saw for the first time, you know, it was painful. And I try not to, you know, go in those spaces because I don't like to emotionally be in those spaces, but it was a painful thing to see for the first time to see it's still black, you know, someone else has owned it now and they're trying to fix it up, but it's still like, you know, it's a skeleton and you can still see burn areas of it and all that stuff. And it's like, man, I had pictures in that house still. I had things in that house still that now I can't get. Those things are gone. And that happened still. You know, after all these years has passed by, as I still think I'm rising and rising, I want people to know that, you know, things are still going to come down and get you, but you got to still keep going, you know? So that's one of the things I still deal with today. And, you know, I saw her recently and it's just, you know, I'm trying to curb the negativity when I'm there. Right.
So what's, we can change subjects, or what's the mental health status of your mom? Just from, say, okay, you mentioned earlier that she's a drug addict, but do you think there's any underlying symptoms or anything there that she might be trying just for your openness, I'm going to give you some of mine. My brother, 2 years older than me, he passed away in 2019. He was diagnosed bipolar schizophrenic, but he used drugs to cover that up.
Okay.
He was unmedicated, so he tried to self-medicate. And from that, he led him to a life of homelessness, ended up taking his own life. I kind of see what you're saying with your mom. It's like you have this disappointment there because the expectation is always there for them to do the right thing. And you expect them to snap out of it at some point because you love them. And you know they love you in some weird way, even though they're selfish and they keep doing the thing that you don't want them to do. So I was just wondering, like, do you think your mom may have had some underlying mental health stuff in the very beginning that maybe she was trying to cover up that just maybe worsened through the drug use?
Yeah. My grandmother had 9 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So during that time, just imagine, because she had me at a teenager as well. Mm-hmm. She was a teenager. And so I was born in 1980. So I'm sure she had some demons that she was fighting mm-hmm. during that time.
Yeah.
Trying to escape.
Yeah.
And she found drugs to use that. That's and she scary. Couldn't figure out a way to stay away from it.
Yeah.
So when I see her today, mentally, she's gone.
Yeah.
I can't sit with her for no longer than 15 minutes.
Yeah. That's how it was with my brother towards the end, too. I couldn't mm-hmm. stand to be in the same room with him. And yeah. it's not because you don't love them. It's because you hate to see them the way they are. Mm-hmm. And you know that's not them. That's somebody else or mm-hmm. something else. Mm-hmm. So I get where you're coming from with that. And I know it's, and this is something that we can edit out if it's too much. And I know that, but it's something that has come very close to home, obviously, for me. Yeah. And I love to see the example that you're setting when it comes to making it out, not following that same mm-hmm. that same path, and then having the clarity
right.
to kind of see above it. It doesn't happen a lot for folks like that. So
I mean, it's I used to have this thing where I try to pride myself as a Christian. Mm-hmm. Some people don't have beliefs and all that stuff. I don't judge in either way. But me, I've tried to tell myself, or I looked at myself, I used to look at myself as, I'm probably going to burn in hell, because there were times where I hated her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I truly had a hatred yeah. towards her. And that was all the way into my adulthood. You know, I all the way to where I could say recently
mm-hmm.
curving that personality. And I was like, used to tell myself, man, I hope that I can figure out a way to release that. Cause now I'm holding on to something yeah. that I can't get past.
You're giving her power.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But Dad, and I don't want to go too deep, but, cause we can, like I said, we can totally delete this or whatever, edit this out. But you I'm often down. Wonder too, if this is one of those occasions where you didn't hate her,
mm-hmm.
you hated the situation that she was in or placed you in and the circumstances surrounding that.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably, when you peeled it all the way back
yeah.
deep down, it probably wasn't the hate you're thinking it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just more of whatever happened there. But on that, there is this next chapter mm-hmm. because you go on and get onto sales team, yeah. sell teams. Now, I'm not that familiar with how this transition works. So help mm-hmm. us out here, and especially the listeners. How do you get selected for whichever SEAL team it is that you end up going to?
They kind of give you like options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You very get like small.
A wish list?
Yeah, wish list. Okay. I was trying to think of the name. I'm glad you got it. Like a wish
we used to have one of those as well. Yeah. I don't know if they still do, but yeah.
They still, well, I finished in 2021. So yeah, I think yeah. they still do.
Yeah.
And you can only get what coast you want,
mm-hmm.
east or west. And I'm not going to lie. You know, at that time, right when I was going through some of that stuff, I was about to get married. And I was like, you know what? Well, I let her talk me into it. She wanted to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Cause she wanted, we've been in San Diego dating and all that stuff. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll go to, you know, why not? Let's go to Hawaii and go to the SEAL team out there. Now, the SEAL team in Hawaii is the SDV team. That's where you learn how to drive submarines. That's kind
of
cool.
Get out of here. I didn't know that.
That's the Jane sweet. Bond type that's stuff right there, bro. That's that real slick stuff that you see in the movies.
Yeah.
So that was cool, right? And I'm like, all right. And I'm seeing here and all these missions. You know, they go do these missions, sneak around in the ocean. They come out, do their thing, come back, get in, go back to the mothership. All that was cool to me. So we go in. So that's why because I'm the honor man, I actually get to pick. Of
your
where
choice.
You get that choice. Yeah, I'm the only one. If you're the honor man, you get to go exactly where you want to go. So I got that. Everyone else, to kind of split them up into east and west. Mm-hmm. And I still kept in with a lot of my friends from Buds, you know, I mean, because you go through something with those guys. I mean, we went through hell.
I think it's the point, right?
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're going to see them down the line anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you're going to cross paths again.
Oh, yeah.
And then you immediately have camaraderie because, oh, me and you got turned into sugar cookies for 24 hours together. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, we shed blood together. Yeah. You know, we were chafing around our nipples and waistline and ankles yeah. and toes were peeling off because of the water. I mean,
but you can go something. Back and say, he can hack it just like I can.
Yep. Yep. That's the camaraderie. You're right, man. We all had a shared suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that shared sense of suffering created that bond.
Yeah.
And you guys definitely already understand what that's like,
yeah.
you know. So we go out to Hawaii, and, you know, it was cool. And the thing about the Hawaii team, and this is something that everyone can know, those missions primarily are because you're a tier one asset, kind of like SEAL Team 6. Not mm-hmm. kind of, you are just like SEAL Team 6, right? Not every SEAL team is a tier one asset like that. So SEAL Team 6 and SDV. So you go, those missions come from DC and they're kind of regulated by, you know, the fear factor of, you know, how if this, if you get caught, if this goes bad, this is going to go really bad for us in another country. Mm-hmm. So we get missions and, missions get canceled because they're just too much risk, you know? So when I got there, a lot of guys who were already there, you know, they were already training for missions to go on. So when I got there, boom. I luckily got with a platoon that was getting geared up and mm-hmm. starting to train and all that stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, this is perfect timing. Perfect timing. So we got in there, we trained. We trained with the regular Navy submarines because the mini sub is something totally different, right? And you train with that down in Pensacola, Panama City, Florida is where we trained for yeah. that one.
Right down the road in Pensacola.
Mm. Yeah, right down the road. Right down the road, man. We had fun with that too, man. I'm talking about we had so much fun. I mean, just imagine.
White sands, Emerald Beaches,
Back in the day.
Maybe not as nice as San Diego in a lot of ways, but I mean, it's still beautiful beaches. It's
beautiful beaches. Yeah. I mean, remember, that's where MTV and
Spring Break.
Yeah. VH1, Spring Break. I mean, everything was going on down there, right? So I'm down there for months going through training. I mean, this is cool, right? I'm like growing now, but I mean, you know, I'm still having fun with this. And, you know, you graduate, everyone's trying to test out to be the driver, the pilot. Mm-hmm. If you're not a part of the top two graduating your class, then you're most likely going to be a backseater, which is you're the guy to go come out and still do the missions and all that stuff. So when I get to Hawaii, I am definitely not one of the main pilots because that thing is like, it's like piloting a jet. It's like a little stick and you just kind of like go up. It's like Tom Cruise, you know, Top Gun. And that thing is cool. So we get a mission and, the thing about those, you're not on 7-8 month deployments. Those are more so you train for one specific thing, you go do that, and you come back.
And go.
Yeah. Yeah. So we was out there for some months, completed our mission, came back, and it was just, you know, cool. It's just really cool to do, you know, say that you did that. And those ones missions you can't really talk about ever again. But that was something else special to do. And then my time was up. And I came back to San Diego and went, did the normal SEAL teams that go to Iraq, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Syria, all that stuff.
Yeah. How did you like Hawaii in general?
I loved Hawaii.
Okay, because there's mixed people, you know. Yeah. People have been there and stuff. Now, I've gone there on vacation multiple times. But people who were stationed there, you know, they either get rock fever and island fever and stuff and want to get the hell out of there. Or they just absolutely love it. And the military has to kick them out of it, location. So.
Most
just
guys,
curious.
Oh, yeah. Most guys can stay there. You can stay there. But I wanted to have a full, broad spectrum of the SEAL teams, too. So I wanted to come back to San Diego.
But where do you go after that, though, Q? Because, I mean, you were just tier one asset. So,
yeah, I could have opted to try for the whole SEAL Team 6 thing in Virginia. But honestly, I just don't want to be living in Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm from the East Coast. I'm like, I don't want to be back on that coast. I want to still explore. So I came right back to San Diego.
Okay.
That was where.
What SEAL teams there?
You got the odd numbers. You got 1, 3, 5, and 7.
Okay.
And the East Coast, you got the even numbers. 2, 4, 8, and 10. And then 6 is its own thing.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So you came back to San Diego. How long did you end up staying there?
I finished out the rest of my career.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Did you?
In San Diego. Yeah. Nice. I stayed out for years now after that. And I went from that to, trying to think of it, kind of like an instructor.
Yeah.
Maybe after another SEAL team in San Diego. And that's when I really rolled my time out. And, you know, we was doing more of the recruiting for special forces as well. You know, so then I really started getting into public speaking.
Yeah.
I started developing business habits as an entrepreneur. And, you know, then life started to change. I started thinking about, what am I going to do when I get out? Right. Cause I don't want my life to just end as Navy SEAL and all these different accolades. So now I'm trying to get my bachelor's degree. I got that, you know. So all these other little things I'm trying to work on too. I'm speaking at colleges, Texas University, talking to Olympic people about the SEAL teams, my career, where I'm going, you know, young men and women that wants to be a Navy SEAL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then people that are coming in, now I'm kind of like doing a little bit of an instructor role and I'm just in their ear and yelling at them and all this other stuff. So that career was fun. I had a good time before my time to get up out of there.
Did you get a chance to talk too much about book one and book two? I mean, you jump right to three most of the time, probably with them about, hey, I'm a SEAL and this is what I've done. But what about book one and two? Did you ever get a chance to like talk, especially to young people, about that part of your life when you were around touring and talking?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, okay. I use that.
Yeah.
To show them, because some of the colleges we went to in high schools, they were like in the inner cities as well. So I use that to show them, hey, you can do it. And I try to make myself a face of these people. And then the cool thing about that is I ran into one kid at the SIL base in San Diego who was just chasing me around in an exchange store. You guys know what the exchange is.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw some kid chasing me. I didn't recognize him. I'm like, what is this dude looking at? And he just keeps following me. And he comes up to me, says, I heard you speak to me at one of my universities. And because of you, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. And I'm in the program right now.
Get out. So he was there.
He was there.
For that purpose. That's great, man.
Yep. And wow. He was there about to go through buzz.
That's going to be feel pretty fulfilling.
If it did, you know, I had that feeling of significance.
Validation.
That's what I want. And that's the whole nature of what my life is to be like right now. I have a goal to impact millions of lives through the rest of my life until the day I die. So when I'm gone here, I know that millions of people I've touched, I've created something different for them. That is a true passion for me now. And it's huge for me now. So, you know, when he came up to me, it was huge for me. It felt good.
Pay it forward, to give back. I mean, it's the reason why we do this podcast. Yeah. I mean, we both have day jobs and stuff, but this is a passion for us to be able to bring people like yourself on to share these types of stories, to give back to others that are coming through.
Yeah.
You know, and so people are going to be listening to this that may already be on a SEAL team or already be in some situation in some area. But you're giving inspiration to them in different ways. Yeah. You know, everybody gets motivated by a different reason. There's always something there that helps that kind of click. So that's good stuff. So, we talked earlier about like, something, a lesson learned or something that you may have gotten from a deployment. You were going to share a story. And, do you remember what that was?
Yeah. My last deployment in 2016, we was, doing some stuff in Northern Iraq. And this is where I want to tell people about complacency, because and you guys know this from deploying. Yeah. Complacency kills is the nature of the beast. And we always say that complacency kills. You got to get out of that, especially when you're in a high, you know, risk area environment. So, yeah, we was out there doing some stuff in the day, during the middle of the day. We're out there sniping, shooting at we cleared the city. Basically, and we're like shooting at this building across because we found that there was still some bad guys over there. And we're just on the rooftop. This is a summer deployment in Iraq. And we're just, you know, Rambo, no shirts on, just doing it. We got our cameras out recording it. We're just having too much fun. We got complacent. The end of deployment is starting to come around. And as we're up there shooting, right? And we get the rocket out too, man. We got the, and you guys know it, it's the law. The one that the remote, you can sit over here.
Oh, Javelin.
Yeah. There we go. That bad boy. We get that bad boy out. And we launched this thing, right? And it was the coolest thing ever. But we got this thing in slow motion, right? So we're up there. I'm telling you, we're loud. We're just like, oh, yeah. So it comes out in slow motion, and then it dips down. And we're on the rooftop. It dips down, and there's some civilians underneath us, and we're scared to death. And that thing dips down, and we all, like, run to the edge, and it just shoots up, and it goes across, and it hits the back of the building and misses. So we was oh, damn. So while we're sitting there just watching that, and we're just like, oh, man, damn it. All right, we're going to start shooting. Next thing I know, we allow bad guys to know where we were. They got the drop on us. So next thing you know, mortars came all around our house. It was like, bam, 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 bam. So then all hell broke loose. And then we had to really, okay, turn it on, because we was up there playing around and got complacent. And the story behind that is, don't let yourself think that you won, right? Always be hungry. Mm-hmm. Always be looking for the next challenge. And always just have your wits about you, because you just never know what's going on around you, right? People are looking for you to fail. And they were looking for us. And we were just letting them know, big targets, big Americans right here. And as these mortars were walking in on us, then we had to really get ready, you know, get our clothes back on, stop playing Rambo. We're not, this is not the movies. And we did what we had to do. We crushed the enemy like we always do, but it was just, we put ourselves in a bad situation at that time.
So. That's a great story. Yeah. I mean, I feel like at times I've heard something similar where it's around like not just letting your guard down, but, you know, at the end of the day, whatever your best laid plans are, the enemy's always got a vote, you know, in the outcome as well. And so in this situation, they're still there. You may be having a good time, but they still got a vote as to the outcome and what's going to come of this whole thing.
And then I always tell people about change. You know, I tell people, you know, be open to change, you know, because I don't think people make it without help. Right.
No.
You know, you got to be willing to drop your ego. You got to be willing to do things you wouldn't want to do, accept things that you wouldn't want to accept generally, to get where you really want to go, you know. So you got to humble yourself and be ready for change and be open to that message of it. And for me, I'm open for all kind of change. My ego is gone. I don't have an ego, you know. I always look for people who are better than me. Teach me something. Let me follow you a little bit. Let me guide me into what you've done to create with the life that you have, because I want that same thing, you know. So I'm that guy who is always looking for hunger, you know, the next thing. I call it evolving myself, right? Reinventing myself. Got to reinvent yourself all the time. Every so many years, reinvent, right? Yeah, I was in the SEAL teams. Okay, cool. Now it's time for me to reinvent and figure out what I'm going to do after that. I came into being a personal trainer. Okay, that was cool. I want to reinvent and do something else. That was fun. I gave them all. Now I'm in TV. Okay, what can I do now to use that? I'm speaking more. Well, I was doing the speaking a little bit in the SEAL teams too, because I was speaking in colleges and high schools about the SEAL teams. So I'm always trying to reinvent a passion point for me so I can continue to grow and, you know, get hungry. It allows you to get more spunk in you again.
Well, what you're not doing though is you're not dropping lessons learned from high school to CBs to SEAL team to personal training. Yep. You're taking all of those tools and you're just getting a bigger toolbox at this point.
Bigger toolbox.
That you still have those tools.
Yeah.
You're just making room for more.
Yep.
And that model, that frame of mind is what veterans need when they're getting out. It's not time to throw away these tools. It's time to get a bigger toolbox and learn that we might not need this one as much.
Yep.
But it's still there. Yep. We still know how to use it, but we might not need it as much. We need these other things.
Oh, absolutely. Did you guys, because I know I fell into this when I first got out. I fell into a small depression.
Camaraderie, teamwork, sense of identity. You are somebody or you were doing something. And then, absolutely. I think a lot of guys, that's the biggest struggle.
Yep. I fell into that depression right when I got out, right? First, I was excited. You know, I thought I had the plan. Thought I made it, right? You know, big badass. Yeah, I got a bachelor's degree, Navy SEAL. I've been speaking at some colleges here and there. And then I got out and I thought I had a plan still. And then nothing. I didn't have the camaraderie no more. I didn't really have the reason to really get up and do the things I was doing prior to.
You didn't have 29 other accountability partners doing it with you every day.
I didn't have my purpose. I lost my purpose, right? My purpose that I thought I had, I lost that for a moment. So I didn't even want to get out of my house for a while. I was depressed.
Yeah.
And one of my friends, good friend of mine, still my best friend today, his name is Brandon. He lives in Utah. He had to call me and break me down on his experience when he first got. He had got out years before me. And he had to break it down and say, listen, this is what I had to do to get out of that. Right. And then what helped me was listening to his story, listen to the story he had with his wife, his children. And then I had a dream. Kid you not, I had a dream. And it was about how I can create a fitness program for people, right? Get into mental health and all that stuff to really see if I can really break that barrier of people that need something and help be something for people when they're getting out as well. Let them know, hey, I can relate to you because I had this. I had that depressive state. I lost my purpose for a moment and I had to identify myself again or reinvent myself again. And I found it with my fitness program. I found it in building a mental health circuit. And also trying to get out there more and showing other people how to do this. And that helped me thrive out. And then other opportunities came right behind that.
Q, you actually sounded like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you did what you needed. You're helping somebody else, but really you were helping yourself in the process because by being driven, by understanding then if I have a purpose, it's to help Kyle. It's to help Kyle. Yeah. When in reality, it's to help me. And along the way, Kyle's getting benefit. And so I've seen this in some people who have post-traumatic stress. They end up going to psychiatry or psychology and stuff. They're really going through it because they want to understand what the problems are with themselves. But their goal is to help somebody else at the end. You both benefit out of this whole thing.
100%. 100%. And I still see therapists today. And I tell people all the time, man, I am a true advocate for therapy.
I think it's crazy if you don't.
Right.
In some way, you're going to get a checkup for your cholesterol, your right. heart. You're doing everything for here down.
Yep.
But we're not checking on this. We're not talking to somebody for this. And that is, this causes way more throughout here than people will, mm-hmm. will give it credit for. You can think yourself into being unhealthy.
100%. And I truly believe that. You
yeah.
can.
Yeah.
You could talk yourself into so many different, mm-hmm. you know, hurdles and issues of your life. That is something that everyone needs to understand. You can do that.
Yeah.
So be careful about what you say to yourself
yeah.
and mm-hmm. what you put in your head,
mm-hmm.
because that stuff will manifest itself through your body.
Yeah.
And then you'll see yourself sick, see yourself getting injured,
mm-hmm.
see yourself depressed, you know, suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
I've had friends commit suicide. I'm sure you guys have as well. Our brothers in the military, just regular civilians do it today still,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's a thing. It's, mental health is huge. So go see a therapist. There's nothing wrong with talking to someone who's not close to you,
mm-hmm.
who can give you a complete outside idea or view of what you're talking about. So I love it.
Yeah.
Huge advocate of it.
Some people say whatever you put out there is what you're going to get back.
Yes.
So what you're talking about is getting your mental health and your mind and body right in the right way so that you're putting out there the right kind of thing, and it's going to come back in return. I want to go, you had mentioned something right prior to all of this about you know, like pushing yourself and everything else, and you also got into the gym, but you also just started doing something in television, and people are going to be following up with the Special Forces, where you guys are now, that instructor piece that you were talking about earlier is coming out, but you're putting people through very similar types of situations to challenge themselves mentally in places they've never gone before, because yeah. it's a lot of cases, these are celebrities. Over in the UK with Sass Who Dares Wins, mm-hmm. it used to be more, it started off with just regular individuals. And
yeah.
and when I first heard about that, you know, from Foxy and others, it was, wait, there's no prize at the end? There's no $1 million if you finish the whole thing? No, it was just, you're the last man standing, and you mm-hmm. get the prize of doing that. So tell us a little bit about that, and how has that helped you? Also in this process of getting that opportunity.
It's another reinvention of myself again, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Now it gave me another avenue, another tool, mm-hmm. you know, for my toolbox that I now can use to reach even more people, the platform of it. Because now we're putting celebrities who at some point were probably at the top tier of their industry, and whether they're athlete, mm-hmm. you know, or movie star, musician or whatever, and they've hit a wall maybe, mm-hmm. right? Or they're trying to challenge themselves. They're trying to reinvent themselves. You know, so many different things they're looking for to achieve as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the course, because people think of it just as a you know, was a reality TV show. But we take it truly as a military program selection course. So it's four hosts, myself as a Navy SEAL, a Marine Recon, Rudy, and two SAS, well, one SAS and one SBS,
yeah.
Foxy and Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And we take these celebrities through a program where we're testing them now, and we're putting them on the spot where they have to go deep mentally. And I don't think it's all about being physical,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to fail some of these tests. And a lot of times they fail the entire challenges. Every challenge we put in front of them, they fail. But then it's up to them to see, are you going to quit now that could you keep failing? Remember, I did that because I was feeling that I shouldn't be here, right? Even me had that issue. Or you're going to keep pushing forward and keep pushing forward and know that you can go further mentally than you can with your body. And we put them in positions like we were all deployed. They don't eat as much. They're tired, sleep deprived, right? They're looking for water. They don't get that as much. And see where their mindset will turn out to be at the end, and see who's the last man or woman standing. And you'll be surprised. Sometimes it's a woman finishing at the end, right? Not because she's weaker than the man. It's just mentally she's more adapt. She's mm-hmm. more ready. She's attached to her emotions better. She can understand, okay, how to say, no, I can do this, right? This is going to end. I just got to keep pushing forward. I'm here for a reason. I'm here for something else outside of me. I'm here for my kids. I'm here for my husband. I'm here for my wife. I'm here for something bigger than you as an individual person, and stop being selfish, because they're being selfless now on the show. And to see them, to see their tears at the end of the show, the challenging them and seeing them, you know, they're just so happy to finish it. And like you say, they don't get anything. this is gratifying for them and individuals, but for us to see them make it through, mm-hmm. because sometimes we'll try to see which ones we think we get through at the end, and then we'll be surprised at the, you know, at the end of who actually stayed. So yeah. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I remember, I can't remember what season it was, and who the gentleman's name was, but I think he was a basketball player, really confident individual, mm-hmm. a little arrogant or confident.
Was that Des Bryant?
No.
No, that, and Dwight Howard.
I remember that he kept, you know, pulling that off, but he was trying to say to people that that's not how he is and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when they pulled him in, you know, they put the, you watch the show, for those who watch the show, they'll put a cover over him. If you guys want to single somebody out, like, yep. let's bring him in, you know, or her in, and you'll put a cover over him and you'll take him through some channels. Then you put him into a room and it's mm-hmm. dark, and then you, take it off, and then, it gets deep in there. I mean, because you got them in a vulnerable moment in a dark room. Yep. It's pretty much only lit up on the instructors. Mm-hmm. And you get, like, you know, basically, what's going on with you? Why aren't you doing this? So, and then sometimes there'll be a trigger moment you guys will pick out in terms of something you can tell emotionally that must be eating at them from deep in their past. And that's when... Like, I could totally have seen through the stories that you just relayed to us in your journey, mm-hmm. instructors doing that very same thing. If that were, if that were an opportunity to say, hey, mm-hmm. let's pull him aside, yep. tell him you could be the honor man,
mm-hmm.
get your head right.
You know, but they didn't do that in Bud.
No, I'm not saying they did.
We don't get that. Yeah, we don't get that at all. You get beat down, even if you have a good day in Buzz, they're gonna make sure you know it was a bad day still. No matter what.
Yeah.
They're going to really take you.
No easy day.
The easy day was yesterday because it's gone. You know, that was it. So we take those in there. We take them in those. We call it the mirror room.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really just trying to get into their psyche. We're testing them at the same time, saying that they're going to tell us something that we need to hear, which is we already know the truth to certain things. You know, we just want to see if they're going to open up and be honest to us on some things. Because we'll catch some guys in some lies. And then now it's pretty much your ass at that point.
Do you guys have psychological profiles?
Yes.
You do?
Okay. Oh, wow.
That, see, I knew there was something That's there. Good. It was like, how do you guys already know it's some
gotta,
of
there's
this?
There's got to mm-hmm. be actually probably a pretty big research effort on the front end.
Yes. But, I mean, that's what happens in selection and going into soft. You end up getting psychologically profiled and the whole bit. So it makes sense.
So we already know kind of what can get them. Yeah. And we're going to challenge them on that. Yeah. You know, outside of just the you know, what's obvious, they're afraid of water or heights or whatever like that. We know what really gets them inside. Mm-hmm. We can get them up here, and we're going to push that, and we're going to see if we can pull them out so they can peel back their own layers of who they are to find their power and mm-hmm. walk into their own power. Because mm-hmm. that's really the goal for us, to try to push them to find who they really are deep down. Because some of them, they've been living this celebrity life for so long that they've kind of lost who they really are in the way, right? And they're trying to find that person. They want to find another way of reinventing themselves at the same time. So they're like, okay, there's something else in here that I always wanted to become or always wanted to do with my life. So now how do I find that? Where is that? I feel like this is it for me, but I know there's more. How can I pull that out of me? And that's what we're trying to do on the show. And it's a real show. So when people see that and they think, oh, we're tailoring it to this, that, and the other. We're not, you know, what we say to them. It's real. What they say to us is real.
What you guys are doing are real.
What we're doing is real.
I mean, there's some heated
moments.
Stuff.
Yeah. There's real heated moments. So we go through it.
Yep. Well, and I know you guys also have, everybody has certain things that you might be fearful of or you'd rather not do that are uncomfortable and those types mm-hmm. of things. And I've noticed, knowing at least a few of the people that are the instructors, that you guys also make sure you push yourselves in that situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys proofing some of the challenges and stuff before they do it?
Well, before they show up, we'll test them to make sure everything works right because mm-hmm. we want to make sure they're safe.
Yeah.
Like on the last one, the first thing I did, the first task, and I had just right before they showed up a chance to get on it just to make sure everything was good. So it's not like you really get a time to, okay, we're going to just test this and make sure I'm comfortable with it. No, we're going into this first time too as well. So we got to like get out there and just do it.
Oh, wow.
And then the other thing is, remember my first time I'm doing it for the very first time on the show, it was different for me because everything was quiet. All eyes were on me. Now I got this drone flying around my face and I can just hear this buzzing. Bzzz, and that's like, can this thing shut up? I'm trying to focus. I got to go across this ladder in this cliff. And, you know, and I was like, if I mess this up in front of all these people, Oh my God.
Not to mention in front of America.
Oh, and in front of America, right? Because they got to see this. I'm like, this is on TV. So
it ain't
I'm
just
like,
the 7 or 10 people down there. It's now, the millions watching.
Is there a competition between SBS, SAS, and the Marine Recon and the SEAL?
You know, Billy and Foxy have worked together more so. Mm-hmm. And I you can see that between them two. They have a little like brother love going on there. Me is kind of new. So, you know, definitely there's some shit talking in the background for sure. We definitely clown each other because that's what we do. Yeah. You know, that's how we, and I haven't worked since I've been out of the SEAL teams. Right. But I wonder if in, you know, the corporate America field, do they have that kind of camaraderie?
No.
You know, do you know?
No, I do know.
You
no.
do? Yeah.
No,
you
know? They yeah. don't. And, you know, there used to be programs out there like ropes and stuff like that where mm-hmm. you'd go and take it. And that got so boring and to try to build that kind of camaraderie. But there's also not in the private sector the type of leadership, the investment in the person and the individual where you sit down and you understand what makes you who you are. You know, if I were going to be your NCYC or something, the first thing I'd be wanting to know is like all of that stuff that you shared in the very beginning of this show. I'd want to know what makes you who you are and all of that. So I make sure that when I'm putting you in a certain situation, how you're going to react. Mm-hmm. In the private sector, we don't get that deep because whether it's human resources or whatever the reason, it's very surface level. Mm-hmm. And the relationships are not always formed in the same types of way where it's brother to brother or brother to sister, because at the end of the day, when rounds are flying, that's all we care about is one another.
Right, right.
It's different there. It's a dog-eat-dog world, you know, where everybody's wanting to climb the ladder. So if you can create a program now that would benefit organizations in that way, and I know there's a bunch of former, you know, individuals, whether it's SOF or just veterans in general, that's created programs, but most of them are about applying the military's leadership skills and stuff or our traits and how our values and things to the private sector. What you just described of how to build that kind of teamwork in a way in which you understand what that really means when you have a solid team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know there's that many out there that's available, that I've seen at least.
Okay.
And been a witness of.
One thing I got to comment on is the company I currently work for, they are running DISC profiles for every one of their employees. So not every one of their employees, but every piece of management from the lowest level of management up.
Okay.
So from basically CEO to assistant foreman, everybody gets a DISC profile. So I know if you're a high D or a high C or whatever, and I know, and it comes with the literature behind it to say how to approach these people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think that is kind of turning a corner where we're trying to learn each other different than the surface level. Yeah. But as far as those organic obstacles that come from a military background, there's nothing like that.
You talked about you know all your brothers that went through, you know the class, you know the you all bled the same. Mm-hmm. You all sweated, you all starved the same, you came from the same die cast.
Yeah. But it's not
the way out of here.
It's not the way yet. I don't think it's yet though. Honestly, I think something has to change or it's gonna come to a head between boss and employee or company and employee or whoever. I think it's eventually going to come to a head.
I think there's probably a space now for something that could be created, like a leadership training.
Yeah.
Ran by SOF.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, whether it's a day or two or something like that where we can get all these corporate leaders together and we can give them a course. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To start doing something, put them in a place where they have a shared sense of suffering.
Right? Yeah.
Because when you have that, then you trust, you build that trust, more communication, you know, that respect for each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see each other in a different perspective when you go through something like that together.
Yeah. It's just hard to do, in those types of settings, different from the military where you're always going to be together. You're always going to be training, and our training periods are, you know, through different selections or different trainings at minimum, say 4 weeks.
Yep.
Maybe as long as 3 months or in your case, a year.
Yep.
Yeah. But if it's 2 days, what can you do in 2 days to get a team who's usually not together and form a team and do it within 48 hours? That's the tough point.
The only thing I could think of would be like orienteering. Like you have 2 days to get from here to there.
Yeah.
we have a beacon on you. We know where you
like
are.
Like I said, I'm sure there's ways to do it. Yeah. Absolutely, there's ways to do it. I just don't see that those things are available, or that if they are available, they're just not as well known.
Right, right.
But hey, we've got somebody sitting in front of us that there's a way.
I'm all about it, you know, filling voids of things that hasn't been there, especially now that we're in this position, because all three of us are in this position now, that we have this time that we can make something, create something that can fill a need, right? You know, and these corporate companies that's looking for better leadership, camaraderie with their employees, I think that's something we can always do, you know? And if I can lead something like that, I'm telling you, I would definitely do that. And we have the community. We have people that we know who will be all in. I'm sure you guys will be all in. Yeah. I'm like, hey, man, I got this gig we're going to do out here in Miami Beach or South Carolina Beach, Myrtle Beach. And I have this corporation coming over here. We're going to do this training for them for the whole week. You know, they're giving us their supervisors, their leadership from every bit of their organization around the country. And they're all coming here. And we're going to build some crash course. And we're going to put them through hell. Sugar cookies. Everybody.
Yes. I've got some ideas. We'll talk after.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the last thing that you would want to leave to those who, I mean, you gave us some great stuff. Don't get me wrong. And of course, I love the title of your book, and that may just be it alone. What's the lasting impression that you'd like to leave, especially to those who are listening, who might be doubting themselves or wondering, you know, maybe they're hard or whatever on themselves. What can they do? What can you share with them in words of wisdom outside of that?
I would say, if I could leave something to anyone as a lasting impression, for something for them to take with them, is we are not here to be slaves to this life. There's more to this life than just, you know, hardship every day. There's more resilience in you, in each one of us. Every one of us has a certain level of power that we can find, but we have to tune into. And you have to be willing to just be humble, to go into those steps, to find yourself, to peel back the layers of who you are as an individual person, and find your own personal power, find your growth, and then be willing to dig deep outside of who you are as an individual, because it's bigger than each one of us. This life is more than just you. It's more than just me. It's about being and giving. So it's a gift that we are here every single day. So use your gift, take your gift, and go give it to someone else.
Wow, that's powerful, man. I'm not going to lie. I have chills. So that's good. That's good stuff. What about the junior NCO, young lieutenant, young officer who may be listening to this, thinking back on your career? I mean, you spent 20 plus. Mm-hmm. So what you've known from through your travels and everything else to this point, your journey of life.
Man, if I was to tell a junior officer.
Speaking to Jovan Quarles in the CBs, who's already screwed up multiple times.
Oh, man, you know. Woo, that's a big one because I don't think I had nobody telling me nothing personally when I was doing that, when I was having my issues initially. So I guess if I can go back and say something to me or to any junior person coming in that's having those battles, I would probably tell that person to find what inspires you and use that to propel you forward. Like for me, my grandmother inspired me. And to disappoint her was huge. And everyone I believe in this world has someone close to them that they are inspired by, that they care for, that they love. I don't think there's not one person in this world that doesn't love someone. Even the worst person, they love somebody. They care about opinions of someone. Think about what that person will feel if they see you continue to fail. And use that to continue to win. Right? Because winning is a conscious decision. We said that earlier. And quitting is a conscious decision. Be conscious of what you want to do. Use my grandmother. Use your mom. Use your dad. Use your brother. Use your coaches. Use your friends. Use your girlfriend. Use your kids. Those are so many different things you can have as an inspiration for you to stop being an asshole and get out of your own way and be great.
Why not me?
Why not me?
Dude. Appreciate you coming on the show, brother. Absolutely.
absolutely loved
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.